I enjoy the sound of language.
That's Petra Kuppers. She's a Michigan-based poet and our guest today.
My first language is German, so I write in a second language, and I just so enjoy the play of language on my tongue. And I try to capture that in these delicious words. They're all foreign words for me, right? So I try to capture that deliciousness. And with that approach, the deliciousness of touching a leaf or touching someone's skin.
That deliciousness, that sensuality, it's a big part of Petra's work. She writes a lot about bodies, the strangeness and beauty of them, how we live in them. And this work is deeply personal. Petra's disabled, and she thinks a lot about disability culture. For her, the process of poetry, observing and distilling her experiences through writing, is a healing one. On today's episode, poetry, bodies, queerness, and healing through words. You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. To start us off, Petra's going to read one of her poems. It's called Craniosacral Rhythms, and she says it was inspired by her wife. This is from Petra's most recent poetry collection, Gut Botany.
Earthquakes everywhere. My head hurts till she touches. Her hand on my forehead. Her hand on my breastbone. Blood, magma, and lymph touch plates. Sent them shiver, suspend in skin sacs the corrugated surface of the cortex. Fissures and sulky. Larger and smaller divisions. Huge surfaces wrapped inward. Our memories fold around each other's fingers. Let me kiss the spot where the electrodes fasten to her temples, reset neurons, Frankensteinian fire, old techniques of fluid, electricity and storms. Continents beneath, iceberg depth, into the brainstem, reptilian Urmama flaps her tail, search for connection. Japan may fold, California inch further away from Nevada. We rest here, our plates, enthrall with each other, ping our way into our skulls, cover, cover, till the borders break open, cannot release, member post-traumatic recursions, member vulnerable stories, we burn white, bright.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Your exploration of bodies has a really strong sensual dimension, but also really strong sexual dimensions too. And for some people, writing about bodies in this way is the most difficult form of writing, either because it's really personal or just because it's very difficult to put words to things that are so much a part of the physical world. Have either of those two things ever been true for you?
That's a really beautiful question, and I think it's one that many poets try to address in their workshops when we work with members of the public, when we try to open up what poetry does and can do for people, you know, which often is one of the things it does, is to open up a particular moment, a sensation to words. And yes, that is the hard thing to find those words. And I don't think it was as hard for me as it might otherwise have been, because I so often found myself not able to do something full out in the real world because my joints and bones wouldn't allow me to. So finding refuge in words, finding the companionship of literature and the companionship of poetry was very much part of my world as I grew up, as I came into myself.
Your most recent poetry collection is called Gut Botany, and I feel like this has touched on a lot of phrases that have become very common. I hear all the time now about gut health and probiotics and every person's dermatological flora, the term for the microbes and bacteria that we all have that live on our bodies but that aren't harmful to us. But at the same time, it's a really interesting juxtaposition of words. Where did the title come from?
Yeah, the title came from much of the sorts of things that you're thinking about there. Anxiety so often rests in the gut, right? So another aspect of the story, which I'm not going to talk about in any detail here because it needs more space to unfold, is assault. You know, I was assaulted, and this book is part of a healing journey from sexual assault. And so much of the tension and the trauma of that manifests itself in the gut. You know, when we hold our guts, we hold our whole being. So much work in somatic work, for instance, is about relaxing or letting, not relaxing into formlessness, but finding a supportive structure that allows us to shape our experiences, to push things through, to allow us to think and feel things through to completion. So that was part of this notion of gut botany as well. You know, I was there's this notion to the natural world, botany, and there's gut botany as this, the environment insides and outsides coming in contact with one another, as they did in both of the poems I just read as well. So that's for me a really interesting and important mechanism, how the images that we hold of ourselves and our interiors and the images that we hold of the world we're in and the land that we're on, how they can all be in contact with one another and allow us to heal.
Your teaching is not just concerning poetry. Of course, you work with people on their writing, but your teaching has also involved disability culture. And we're living in this era when, first of all, disability culture has a name. Second of all, it has something of a traceable evolution. And it's a path that people can follow as they're figuring out their own experiences. Do you notice anything about what disability culture and, I mean, if we want to get really into it, disability culture poetry, what this has picked up from queer identity and queer poetry?
Thank you. Yes, I celebrate with you the fact that disability culture is a thing, right? That we can say these words here. It gives me so much pleasure that you ask me a question like that. It's so rare still that someone asks me about disability culture from a place of understanding it as part of an identity formation, just like queer culture. So that gives me great delight, and I say thank you, April. And yes, the two have learned much from one another, because just like queer culture, crip culture, disability culture had to reinvent the values of words. Right? Still in our shared world right now, disability has a very negative connotation for many people. Many people feel a lot of shame around being different in that particular way. In the same way, people who are queer found ways of recovering the term queer to make it a word of both depth and a history of oppression and also of celebration and joy. And I think this is how many people now are approaching disability culture. And it makes me so glad to be part of this movement, to be part of a movement where disabled people come together and with all our differences, understand how important it is to love the body, mind, spirits that we are in the world.
Yeah. At the same time, it's easy to see how disability culture itself is sort of a complicated concept. You know, the way people's bodies work can mean very different things about their experience of the world. And the experience of someone with a hearing disability is not the same as someone with MS or a different kind of neurological experience of the world. When you're teaching, how do you talk about what is worth grouping together and what has to be an individual experience of identity?
Yes. So I don't tend to approach disability culture teaching from a place of individual different disabilities, because you're right, our experiences are hugely different from one another. They're also really different from one another depending on how we're racialized, how we're gendered, how we are classed. There's so many different ways in which we have significant differences. But by calling it something like a culture, we're being aware of the fact that there is a wide range of expressions in a culture. So I'm focusing on the cultural work that disabled people do of all kinds, lots of different kinds, deaf people, neurodiverse people, people with pain, people with mobility differences. We're all creating different kinds of artworks. And I'm just very interested in looking at what this art looks like. Very many of us push back against mainstream discrimination. So that's definitely a theme that runs through many of these works. Many of us push back against any kind of monoculture. So those are thematics that we can pick out from many different artists out there. So that's the kind of context in which we're looking at this. And many of the students that I'm introducing to disability culture have never heard of the topic and are not familiar with this as an area that one could study. And this is the same as when you teach, you know, queer studies, for instance, or different kinds of identity formations. So it's really exciting to see them understand that there can be depth and richness in difference.
We need to take a short break. When we come back, Petra Cuppers talks us through the healing potential of poetry. Stay with us.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
It's easy to tell from your poems that you're interested in bodies as you know, and as a thing of interest and a thing that we can study and learn from. Do you also sometimes feel an urge to push back on the conception that non-disabled people often have of treating disabled bodies as kind of specimens, something to be examined and categorized and talked about?
Yes, yeah, exactly. That's one of those ableist categories. It's very important to understand disability experiences as unique and as deeply embedded in complex subjectivity. And that is what poems, what literature, what art expression can show us, that there's such complexity in the lived experience of disability. And that can in turn allow us to push back against the idea that there's categorical experiences. You are like this and hence you are this thing. You're only identified by your diagnosis. Cultural work allows us to see beyond that.
Can I ask you to read another poem from Gut Botany?
Sure.
There's one called Rose, Cardamom, Sea Salt that I just really love.
Lovely. I'm glad to read that one. So this is one of a range of poems that were created through drifting in public space with other people, with other disabled people often. So in this one, we're drifting at the Earth Matters on Stage Festival in Reno, Nevada. So readers, listeners, you have to imagine now the landscape around Reno, Nevada. Rose, cardamom, sea salt. Touch and silk and the rough edges of my fingers catch light. Rose, lavender, bergamot. Long hair twists across the plane of the eyebrow and lands draped across a single eyelash. Frankincense, creamy and warmed in the palm, it spreads, ocean camel's back sways in the occupied valley, rose, cardamom, sea salt, sun field crust, crystal white rings around blue and green, a red star in your third eye open, rose, lavender, bergamot, gather fields, hills, sun-drenched and thirsty, a wasp in my hand. Hay and a light brown earth, sandy drains frankincense. Altar boys, rose deep, red and white, sneakers peek out beneath the cassock. Unruly rubble sways to the village, the cross. Smoke ascends, waxen smell grave candles. Drip red white into the mast channels of my back. My hand pools where I open a bird. Now new seepage, charter wrinkles of a new time, my hand a ruined map, not to be rehabilitated, longs, lavender, drowsy, rose drop, salty taste of my dry desert, frankincense, forgive all my trespasses, let me enter in splendor, gracias madre, red and white and purple, under the banner and the monstrance, my head bows into the depth of your nape.
It's getting a little bit warm in here, or is it me? That's beautiful.
Now you can all go and smell all the beautiful smells in your bathroom.
Right. Petra, were there things that were more difficult to learn to communicate that you've had to figure out through writing?
Yes. Yes, writing is really good for figuring things out. For me, in this book, I had to figure out how to reemerge, how to heal. I had been assaulted, and that had been, you know, had been dealt with. I went through court. One of the poems in the poem is a long poem about the court encounter. But the real healing was about reclaiming my body, which had been maltreated. And writing the poetry really helped me to make that connection again, to reconnect with all aspects of my body, the places that had been made very vulnerable. I had to reconnect with ways of grounding myself. So I had, for a long time, I was extremely nervous in meetings, which had really nothing to do with the assault situation. I'm sure every survivor who hears this right now can probably relate to this. I just found myself anxious in very, very unusual situations that I had never been anxious before. So I really had to find ways of finding reconnection and centering in myself. So touching, smelling, seeing, being with trees, Michigan lands, the lakes that come up again and again, those were ways for me to come back. And the writing allowed me to make those connections, to sit with, repeat, work over those connections to bring myself back to wholeness.
Just one more question. Could you tell us about the place where you work these days? I wonder, I've got this image in my head of you maybe sitting outside to write. I just wonder where you sit and think about things.
That's a very nice question, too. Right now, I'm speaking to you from up north Michigan. I'm at Crystal Lake. I'm actually looking out right now over Crystal Lake from a house that's sort of set back a little bit from the lake, so I can look out over it between beautiful green trees. It's nice and cool up here. And this is one of my favorite spots to be and to write. So this is gorgeous for me. And then every day, my wife and I go down to the dock and sit right in the middle of the lake on the dock and go swimming most every day, too. So that's definitely a writing hole, a writing home for me. And so that's one. And the other one, of course, is my lovely, lovely home and party pad in Ypsilanti, Michigan, where I normally live. And where I'll be later tonight, actually. So that's also a very comfortable space in a beautiful neighborhood with friendly neighbors. And I love living in Ypsilanti. So those are my two spaces, both of which have good outdoor spaces. So in Ypsilanti, I have a number of white pines in my backyard. And a friend of mine, who is an herbalist, actually took the pine needles and made syrup out of them. And that's what I took when I was going through what presumably was a COVID experience last March. And it really helped me. So there's this really strong connection of working with and appreciating the creatures, the plant creatures that surround me in both of these sites.
Petra, thank you so much for talking with us. It's really been fun.
Lovely. Thank you so much. It was real fun talking to you too, April.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find the full Stateside show at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Ishikawa, with help from Laura and from April Van Buren. Our theme music is by 14KT. Additional music by Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you have a relaxing weekend. We'll see you Monday.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Williams.
I'm Lester Graham. We've been working on a big project about Great Lakes birds called The Bird Connection.
It will look at ducks and trumpeter swans,
egrets and herons,
and piping plovers. Yes!
We'll discuss what we've discovered at a Michigan Public Issues and Ale event,
including how some problems for birds are problems for people.
It's at Arbor Brewing Company in Ypsilanti, the evening of May 21st at 7.
You can register at michiganpublic.org.